Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike D'Antoni along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:40 for our triple option feature. Got a lot of things going on in the sports world today. Certainly a lot to do with the transfer portal. We'll talk to different people across the country, get their opinions on it. But we're going to start right off the bat in Phoenix, Arizona. We got with us on the line from the Rebel Walk, Evelyn Van Pelt. Evie, glad you made it in. I was wondering if you had made it or not. So welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL.
Thank you all so much for having me. I did make it. I landed. I've been here kind of getting my bearings. I think they're about to have the Miami players do some interviews, and then the Ole Miss players will arrive in a little bit. And so it's all good, and it's all getting underway.
Even before we start talking this, let me just tell the listening audience, because this broke just minutes ago, but the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh have kind of split paths. So John Harbaugh, the head football coach of the Baltimore Ravens, is out. And so there'll be another opening in the NFL. I don't think Coach Harbaugh is going to be unemployed for much period of time. I think he'll get a job pretty quickly there. But it goes to show you kind of the shelf life, I guess, all of us live in one way or another. Is going to come to that point. But John Harbaugh out in Baltimore, so the Ravens will have a new head coach in 2026. Evelyn, I've watched a lot of Sugar Bowls. And I said this immediately. I had to do a national show and then doing stuff with WWL. That performance by Trinidad Chambliss, it goes on the Mount Rushmore of Sugar Bowl performances. How impressed? Because you got to see him all year long, every game, all the plays. But what he did in that game, in the biggest spotlight you could get put in to that point, for him to come up that big was just remarkable. One big play after another. And he's the coolest cucumber in the bunch. I mean, cool as, you know, the other side of the pillar. He was fantastic.
He really was. And I tell you what, you know, you're right. We've watched him all season. You know, he came in, he didn't play the first two games of the season. He was on the bench and then played in the Arkansas game. What a performance. And there have been some incredible quarterback performances in the Sugar Bowl. So to be on up there, I'm with you. That was absolutely amazing. And what I really was struck by is when Ole Miss played Georgia on the road in Athens and they lost, they were held scoreless, I believe, in the fourth quarter, and Georgia scored like 17 points. So Ole Miss had been up by nine going into that. And Trinidad, all week leading up to that and the media opportunities we had with him, you know, he's just said, that was on me. You know, I think he missed one pass to Daquan Wright in the fourth quarter that could have been a little, you know, turning point there. But he just said, that was on me, and I'm just not going to let that happen again. And by gosh, if he didn't, you know, if he wasn't true to his word, because that, you know, that one series in the fourth quarter, you know, those three plays in a row where he's running around, you know, Johnny Manziel like that, that was incredible to see.
What is the main thing Ole Miss has got to do to play up against Miami? And the physicality of Miami has changed throughout the year. They were a quarterback-dependent team offensively around Carson Beck. And then this isn't going to work. This isn't how we built. We built to run the football and pop you in the mouth, and we're going to run the ball. And, you know, Carson's going to be a big part of it, but he doesn't have to be the main part each and every week. What does the Ole Miss defense, because I thought in the first half, Evelyn, they had opportunities to stop Georgia and didn't make the tackle.
They did.
And so give us your big, you know, plus that they have to have against the Hurricanes.
You know, it was funny. I didn't tease them, but I asked a bunch of the kids, a bunch of the players, the Sugar Bowl media week, what are you going to do to make Georgia punt the ball one time at least? Because Georgia didn't punt one time the first time they played, not one time. And they all talked about, you know, communication. And I just think that, you know, it helps them that truly that they play in the SEC. So in terms of physicality, I don't know that that's going to be, I mean, I do know what, I think Miami has two defensive linemen who are projected to go in the top, you know, 21 picks of the draft. So, you know, I mean, they are big and physical. I just think that they're going to have to, you know, look, they have an advantage because they have a Trinidad who Miami's going to have to account for him. I mean, I know they're going to be rushing him, but that the guy is really good under pressure, and obviously his feet are so good. But they're just going to have to, that offensive line, they're going to have to minimize their mistakes. The defensive line, I think they're going to have to try and get some pressure on him. I mean, I guess it sounds cliche, but I think it just starts in the trenches, and they are big. Miami is big and physical, and you're right, they'll pop you in the mouth, and you got to be ready to get back up. And that's one thing with this Ole Miss defense that we're seeing, at least in the latter part of the season, a lot of bend but don't break. And so you wish they wouldn't bend, but you know, I tell you what, if you would have asked probably anybody out there with Georgia at 30, Ole Miss up 34-31 in the fourth quarter and Georgia having first and goal, I'm not sure anybody would have thought that the Ole Miss defense would stop them and hold them to a field goal. But I just, you know, what they've all told me is they've just got to focus on their keys and they've got to communicate, and we'll see.
Evelyn, the last 45 days has been you caught in the vortex of the tornado. Oh. Covering Ole Miss and the Ole Miss fan base, and now the aftershocks, you know, Ole Miss fans and LSU fans, and it's back and forth, that sort of thing. But to cover that, I think that's a much more difficult situation than people might think if you're in charge like Pete Golding is, because you want to try to, as much as you can, keep that outside noise away. Listen to us. Listen to the one voice here, okay, because I'm your head coach now. But it's hard to tune out everything else that's happening. And you're talking about, for older people, that's difficult. Okay, for people your age, my age, and I'm older than you, but think about when you 18 and 20 mm-hmm. and 23, how easily distracted you are. How has it been? How have they been affected by all of this around them and yet still continuing to win?
You know, it's so funny. You literally took the words out of my mouth. I've been saying, and I've had people tell me, oh, well, you know, they get paid all this money. They're professionals. And I'm said, you know what? They're 18 to 22, 23-year-old kids. Yeah, they have a nice bank account, but that doesn't make their emotions and their mentality any more mature than 18 to 23-year-old kids. And I mean, it was overwhelming. I mean, you're right. The vortex, it was like a hurricane and a tsunami and every kind of force of nature you could think of. And, you know, and these kids started off the beginning of the year, you know, Corey Adams from Edna Carr High School, freshman on the team, got killed. And I mean, that's how they started their, you know, right before they started their season. And they've just, I think, they're a very mature team, and they're very tough. And that's one thing Pete has talked about is he really likes about them. They really like each other. They're really tight with each other, and they're no nonsense, and they don't let things get to them. But you're right. I mean, when you see the coach's family, you know, traveling around Baton Rouge when he's still your head coach, you know, and I mean, I can't tell you how many calls and texts and every messages I would get about it. I can't imagine, you know, what those players were going through. So I give them a lot of credit.
The biggest key to win against Miami, and we talked about the physicality, winning in the trenches, but I think the big thing here is to try to make Miami one-dimensional. Force them to say, okay, I'm not going to let you run the ball against me. If you're going to beat me with Carson Beck. Would you think that is the philosophy defensively? Because you don't want Miami to get a running game going, because then they got you in the rocking chair. Mm-hmm. You got no chance at that particular point. But I think the key has to be Ole Miss defensively. Stop the run of Miami.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's just, you know, and my gosh, you know, nobody, I want to say the Hurricanes are only giving up something crazy like 13.1 points per game, fourth best in FBS. Nobody scored more than 24 points. points against them in like a non-overtime game, that's going to be, I mean, they held, A&M offense had been averaging 36 points a game. They held them to a field goal. And then, you know, of course they held Ohio State to only 14 points. So I just, you know, part of it, I think I have the ball. They're going to have to score. You know, they're going to have to find a way to score when they have the ball. Ole Miss is, but absolutely, I think make them, if you can find a way to make them one dimensional, and you know that is no easy task.
And then also, Evie, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Ole Miss's offense. I don't know if anyone's necessarily expecting Trinidad Chambliss to throw another performance like that against a really good Miami defense, but the importance of Kiwan Lacy, who recently re-upped with Ole Miss, he's committed to the Rebel program for 26, but he had a really strong performance against Georgia too, maybe quietly because Trinidad was so good, but just under 100 rushing yards on 22 carries, a pair of rushing touchdowns as well. He's been fantastic all year, obviously. Going up against an elite Miami rushing defense, I think that's going to be a key matchup as well.
Oh, boy, I think so, too. You know, the first time he played against Georgia, he only had 31 yards total. And I think that kind of, you know, that kind of stuck with him in Trinidad. I think might have had four. I think as a team, they only had 88 yards total rushing the first time that they played Georgia. And so, you know, I think that was a focus. They knew that they were going to have to be able, you know, to kind of establish that ground game. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think probably, you know, just that duo there. And I tell you what, Kiwan Lacy, besides being an incredible running back, is elite at his pass blocking. And we asked him about that earlier this week. And he said, you know, I played defense all my life, you know, until I got here. And I love to hit people, you know, so I thought that was kind of funny. You know, maybe that's the mentality you want. But, yeah, absolutely, you're right.
He's the hammer. He's the hammer. and you get it after a while with him. Last thing for you before we let you go, and we appreciate your time today because I know it's limited, but a lot of people, and I guess maybe some purple and gold bias with this thought, that Ole Miss is going to go away after this year. But, okay, if you can get Trinidad Chambliss, the NCAA, to give him the ruling correctly, which I think now he got the right lawyer, he's going to get that.
Man, Tom Mars.
Tom is really good at what he does, Evelyn.
Yeah, he is.
And Lacey's already said, I'm coming back. And then people forget Pete Golding is a really good recruiter. Now, calling plays and all, that's all an art form, and we'll see how that works out. But what they've done this early in the portal period has been really impressive. And I told this to Charlie. That was one LSU lineman I wanted as Carius Kern.
Right.
Because that dude can play. Now, they screwed the pooch with him at LSU. Okay, he was just a true freshman. But he's going to have – he's a tremendously talented young man. But his technique is all off. I don't know what they were trying to teach him. But this is sustainable for me, because you got to go year to year. I don't think you can look 5 years down the road. You got to look one year. You get Chambliss back and Kiwan, and what they're doing in the portal, Evelyn, we might be talking again at this time next year about this Ole Miss team.
I tell you what, I think, you know, they've got all their defensive guys coming back. You know, there was a lot of talk. I think a lot of Ole Miss people even thought defensive lineman Prince William Onmielen might end up at LSU. And he announced, I believe, yesterday that he's returning. So they've got him and Will Eccles and Savion Harris and Jamarius Brown. So that's, and then he's picked up some nice defensive additions, and secondary, you know, they're working on that secondary. They gotta work on that. But I think the defense as a whole will be great. But I think the offense, if you have Chambliss and Lacy, I mean, it'd be hard to bet against those two.
I agree. And now you've gotten a taste of it, of being in the spotlight. And okay, who knows what happens in the Fiesta Bowl or possibly beyond. But, man, that is a great motivation, because Ole Miss is walking on uncharted ground now that they've never walked down sort of, well, early in my lifetime, let me put it to you that way, but
right,
not since.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, credit to Pete. He's keeping them focused. You know, my gosh, I thought when right before the half they had some mismanagement of the clock, they didn't get a field goal kick against Georgia, left 3 points out there, and I'm like, oh, man. And Georgia started off the second half with the ball, and I thought this could get bad. And they rallied, and they don't quit, and they don't give up. I think a lot of that comes from Pete Golding, and he manages to be intense but also not stress them out. So I think credit to him, and Charlie Weiss is doing a great job, you know, calling the plays. So we'll see, you know, let's roll the dice and go.
Evelyn, I hope we're talking next week at the same time. I know what that would mean if we're talking at this point next week. Thanks so much for joining us, and be safe.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks,
all
Evie.
Right, thank you. Evelyn Van Pelt does a great job for the Rebel Walk and covers the Ole Miss football team. And Charlie has a lot more interest in Louisiana about Ole Miss than ever before in my lifetime.
No, listen, the moving back and forth, and I think a lot of surprises recently in the portal as well, Mike. When Lane Kiffin decides to come to LSU, I think a lot of people thought it was a foregone conclusion that Chambliss and Lacey would be following him there. Not so fast, as they like to say.
Not so quick. And,
right.
And Chambliss even admitted yesterday, I did think about it.
Right.
I did think about it. So you understand the dynamics with him, and he's got a bigger fish to fry because he's got to get the NCAA to basically give him another year of eligibility. I don't see why the NCAA wouldn't, but I mean, I don't want to get into that. It's not like Bobby in a tangent with that. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 7 o'clock, got a special Saints Hour with Mike Hoss. He's got some great interviews that he's picked up for us here. Chase Young is one of them, along with Taliese Fuaga, Cam Jordan, Charlie Smith, going on and on. Mike does a great job getting all those interviews. And so 7 o'clock tonight, right here on the Big 870, you can hear Mike Hoss in those interviews with a number of the players on the New Orleans Saints football team. And repeating what we talked about in our first segment, John Harbaugh, the head football coach of the Baltimore Ravens, is out in Baltimore in 18 seasons, 180 wins, 113 losses, 13-11 in postseason and a Super Bowl title, but kind of everybody got a shelf life. And you kind of had a feeling, Charlie and I talked about this, whoever lost that game, they probably weren't going to be coaching the same team in 2026. So John Harbaugh, unemployed, but not for long. It's like the NFL. He's not for long to be hired by somebody else, and I think he'll end up doing a great job wherever he ends up. We'll be back with more Sports Talk. Glenn West will join us. A lot of portal information. We're still waiting on Sam Levitt's decision about LSU. We'll talk to Glenn about it and go 247 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Man, it's been a wild day, and it's going to be like that for another week and a half or so, transfer portal. And so we have on the line with us from Go247, Glenn West. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Glenn, right off the bat, I'm going to ask you about Sam Levitt, because it seemingly this is all chips in for Sam. Got to watch him play last couple years at Arizona State, and watching him, people always want to comp. My comp, easy, Jackson Dart. He's very similar to Jackson. I think Jackson's probably a little taller. Sam's a little thicker. But they both do one thing in college that they really like. Intermediate to longer throws, they better than the short throws. And they pass up a short throw that's easy to try to hit a big play downfield. Now, he's coming off the Lisfranc surgery, and so you gather that that's going to be a few months before he's able to really hit stride with it. But your thoughts on the addition, because I think sometime this afternoon or tonight, we'll find out exactly. Your thoughts on Sam Levitt to LSU?
Yeah, that sure would be nice if we got that answer here in the next couple hours, because I think the longer that it drags out when he leaves campus, you know, the more likely it is for him to consider other options. But from everything that I've heard and everything everybody I've talked to, it sounds like LSU is going to get this over the finish line. They've been meeting with him really since yesterday afternoon. Took him out to dinner last night at a really fancy restaurant. He's been in the building a lot today, meeting with different coaches and personnel people. And I think that LSU, this was always their guy. This was always the guy that I think they had circled. You know, I know they kicked the tires there on Brendan Sorsby. I know if Chambliss had not decided to re-up with Ole Miss and had gotten his waiver, that would have been certainly an option they would have considered and pursued. But I think that he's an ideal fit. And, you know, you mentioned the comp with the quarterback you mentioned just now. The one I've kind of gotten the last couple of days is Bo Nix. You know, Bo Nix in 2022 when he was at Auburn, maybe the year before that he went to Oregon and became a really great player. That's kind of where I think a lot of the NFL and a lot of the college scouts kind of see Sam Leavitt at right now. You know, a guy that has all the athletic traits, like you mentioned, can make the intermediate and deep throws. But just the accuracy is maybe the part of his game where he really needs to develop here over the next couple seasons. And I think that's where I think LSU can really make a great pitch to him, is that, you know, he can come in. We're going to have a great scheme, a great group of players around you. They've already started adding wide receivers and running backs left and right. They're trying to replenish those rooms. So I think he's going to have a lot going for him if he comes back or if he comes here. And, you know, the one caveat I would throw is that injury that you mentioned. I mean, those Liz Franks are a real tough one from a healing process, from a healing perspective, because there's just not a whole lot of blood flow that gets down to your foot in that area. So the way that I've kind of heard it, he very well could miss most, if not all, of spring ball with that injury, which, you know, with the brand new team and all these new players, could certainly take him a little while to get fully, you know, immersed into this system and with these players. So there's certainly some risks, but I think the potential there far outweighs any kind of risk or concerns, because he does have a lot of special talent.
One thing, Glenn, Charlie and I are going to save this. We had an interview with him at Manning camp, and he talks about having to improve his short game. And because I told Charlie, he reminds me so much of Jackson, because that was what Jackson told me literally the year before, that, you know, hey, he's like, you're right. Oh, I could throw. I like the deeper throw. I like the intermediate throw. But, you know, I'm still working on touch in the short throws, and both guys can run with the ball. And so there's a little parallel between him and Dart, and certainly with Nix also. One guy I did see play a lot, Ty Benefield. From Boise State. And so, man, I'm trying to do television with Bobby and I and Rich Marty, and people are saying, well, compare him to A.J. Halsey. No, he's a different player. He's a more of a rangy, linear guy, sort of a thin build. But what is so impressive with Ty is his ability to get up into the seam and make a play against the run. A lot of guys built that way. That's not their forte. They more kind of chop their steps and then try to, you know, catch you, so to speak, lower body. Man, he pops you. He's a really good open field tackler. You know, and certainly some genetics there. His dad played in the CFL for a long time, had a cup of coffee in the NFL. And being a former receiver, you can see his range, how he tracks the ball in flight. That, to me, of all the signees so far, Benefield, to me, and they haven't signed Leavitt yet, he has been the big splash, because that guy, he ain't watching. He's playing day one. He's going to be the starter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think what's so great about him is that he does a lot of his work around the line of scrimmage. And if you're LSU, you're losing Harold Perkins this year at the star. I think it just makes all the sense in the world to slide a guy like Ty Benefield into that spot, or maybe you kind of rename it and you make it a nickel safety or something like that instead of a true star. But I feel like he is the perfect blend of a guy that can blow up plays in the backfield and then also be able to really drop in coverage and make plays in the deep end of the field as well. I mean, he's just a really well-versed player, a guy that I think – looks at the mold of a guy like Monster Delane this last year. If Delane at this time a year ago, you know, people thought that he might be kind of that day two draft pick kind of prospect. But he really took a chance on LSU, and he took what Corey Raymond and those guys were preaching to heart. And he turned himself into a first round pick this year. And I think Benefield looks at that, you know, kind of blueprint that Delane took this last year and says, well, why can't I do the same thing? You know, I'm a really talented player. And so I think that this system, and certainly with what LSU has proven to be in the past in the secondary, what they've been, what they were this last year in the secondary, you know, they're going to have so many of those guys returning now with Pickett and Woodland, and you know, it's Marcus Cooley and Deshaun Spears. You really rounded out with a guy like, you know, Brentfield, who's just a really great overall player and a guy that can make a lot of things happen, both in the backfield and in the deep part of the field. I think he's a home run hit for LSU. And to this point, he's definitely LSU's top signing.
You got one thing y'all can't teach him: instincts. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You can be big and you can be fast and you can be strong, but if you don't know what the hell you're doing, it doesn't do you a heck of a lot of good. He's instinctive, and you can tell he knows what to do out on the field. One guy that they brought in today on the defensive line, Stephalian Green. I remember when he came out of, I think he's from Rome, Georgia. He was a big-time high school recruit, redshirted year one. I thought he played really well as a redshirt freshman. Last year, I can't tell you one dude on that Clemson defensive line that played well. And I think, Glenn, that was the disappointment. We were looking at, with Parker coming back and Peter Woods and Green, that, man, that would be the strength of their team. They get the transfer guy from Purdue. None of them played well. Not a one. This is a young man with talent. Now the refinement in him has got to be done at LSU.
Yeah, he's played 2 years. He's got 2 years of eligibility left. And I think that's kind of a common theme that you're seeing with a lot of these guys that LSU is bringing in. I think, you know, the safety, you know, kind of is the maybe the lone exception. But they're bringing in a lot of guys that have multiple years of experience, but also multiple years of eligibility left. And I think that a lot of these guys, you know, LSU's kind of pitching, you know, not only just being here for 2026, but developing in our program, developing in this system, and staying for 2027 as well. And so I know you can't project out that far, and there's just so much stuff that kind of, you know, changes things on a year-to-year basis. But, you know, a guy like Green, he's had some bright moments. You know, he was actually the leading tackler in the Clemson game for Clemson in that game against LSU. He had, I think, 6 of his 18 tackles that in that game against LSU. He did a really nice job in that game. I think he's going to be a guy, when you look at, you're replacing Jacobian Guillory, you're replacing Bernard Gooden, somebody on the interior that can just kind of, you know, eat some space, but also have some power and ability to get into the backfield as well. I believe he had 2.5 or 3 sacks this last year as well. He's somebody that I think is really intriguing, and I think can round out that defensive line room really well, because I will say, like, I think that they're going to want these freshmen to play pretty early if they're able to, like Richard Anderson, Lamar Brown, maybe Deuce Gerald. They're really high on that group of players. If you're able to surround those guys with some players that have played for a little bit and have some experience, I think that it's going to make for a really, really entertaining and interesting defensive line room next year.
Glenn, it seems like LSU's been addressing a lot of different spots, the running back position, wide receiver, defensive line, safety, as we've mentioned throughout the call here. But one spot that they haven't necessarily addressed just yet, and I feel like it's the one that they need to add maybe the most bodies, is the offensive line. Just want to get your thoughts on that spot for this Tiger team, because a ton of different names from last year's unit entered the transfer portal. Some have already found new homes. Mike had already mentioned Kerryus Kern going to Ole Miss, Ori Williams landing in Tennessee. But just your thoughts on LSU's offensive line for 2026 and how many pieces that they need to add there, because it seems like one of those major roster holes early on. But obviously you can address it in the portal.
Yeah, if quarterback is kind of the 1A that you need to go get right, if you're LSU, I would put offensive line as the 1B. I mean, they're right behind quarterback in terms of the most important position here that LSU has to go attack, and maybe closing on Leavitt will help them in that respect. You know, they'll have a star quarterback that they can preach to a lot of these O linemen. They obviously have the scheme. They'll have a lot of the past success offensively that this offensive staff has had. So maybe that'll help them in their pitches to go get some of these offensive linemen. But it's been a little bit more of a slow burn. You know, they've been bringing guys in. They've been having them on visits. And, you know, I think it's also been kind of interesting because a lot of these offensive linemen really haven't started entering the portal or announcing their intentions to enter the portal until the portal opened. I mean, up until the January 2nd date where the portal really opened, I mean, Carius Kern was the top-rated offensive lineman, and then the next highest guy was a three-star. I mean, they haven't really been filing into the portal as much up until the last couple of days. So I think LSU is just kind of biding its time there. They know that they got to go out and get several starters. They got to get a tackle. They got to get a couple guards. You know, they got Braylon Moore that I think they're finalizing a deal with to return. They've got Weston Davis back in the fold. Solomon Thomas is an interesting young player that can return for LSU as well. But they've got to replenish. They've got to go get older. They got to go get more experience. And I think you'll certainly see that turn, that corner start to be turned if they're able to close here on Leavitt and really kind of centralize their focus on the offensive line, because it's really, really important that they go get several guys that can start and also probably some added depth players as well.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised maybe to try to tap into that Ole Miss roster when that season comes open there too.
Yeah.
That's going to be the Pandora box too. Last question for you, Glenn. Lance Hurd, because a lot of people have asked me, would Lance Hurd return to LSU? My thing is, he'd certainly have a spot. And, man, watching that dude, he got some talent. Now, again, the technical part still is a work in progress with him, but he was the most highly rated offensive lineman, him and Campbell sort of coming out different times. But, man, you talk about a guy with some talent. That is Lance Hurd. Any connection you've heard between LSU and Lance Hurd?
None that's concrete. I think, you know, if he wants to play left tackle, I mean, that's the reason he left LSU a couple of years ago, is because he wanted to play left tackle. Well, left tackle is wide open right now for the taking. So I think the thing with Hurd here is teams are weighing how much he's asking for in the transfer portal versus, you know, how much they actually really want to spend on him and make him kind of the all-in, you know, kind of go for it kind of starting left tackle. I mean, those guys aren't cheap. And so, you know, I think that evaluation process with him is still ongoing. I'd be a big proponent of bringing him back and finishing his career at LSU. I think that would make a lot of sense. But I think it also just has to come down to what LSU feels like they can spend at that position, what they feel like, you know, he could offer them at that position, and if that matches what you know they feel would be a good value to them, then I think that they absolutely would, you know, could pursue that opportunity. But he's going to be a guy that's going to have a lot of teams after him. I think he's very much kind of weighing and sitting back and weighing all of his options. I think he just officially entered the portal yesterday. So I'm sure he's fielding a lot of calls. His agents are fielding a lot of calls. So I would certainly be on board with that. But I don't have any concrete intel that LSU has made a serious, serious push yet for him.
Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. We used to always think, you know, after the first of the year, unless you were looking for coaches, it was sort of a dead period. You know, not a lot going on.
I missed that.
That didn't change, brother. That changed.
The next couple of weeks is going to be a lot of time on the old laptop, but wouldn't happen any other way until LSU fills that roster.
God bless him, brother. It gives us content, Glenn.
Yes,
content.
Sir.
And that's fantastic. And this isn't a one-year deal. This is going to be every year, maybe not to this extent, but we are walking on land we haven't walked on before with all this transfer portal stuff.
They don't call him the Portal King for nothing, or
he
doesn't call himself the Portal King for nothing. So I feel like it's a lot more of this to come, guys.
Yes, sir. Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. Always do a great job, buddy. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
All right, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Glenn.
All righty. Glenn West does a fantastic job for Go247 Sports. And, boy, man, things fast and furious in the transfer portal period. And I think 24 hours from now, we'll know one way or another about Sam Leavitt. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Finishing up here in our number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, I want to thank Evelyn Van Pelt from the Rebel Walk, along with Glenn West, does a great job covering the LSU Tigers for Go247. Got a lot more Sports Talk. We'll talk about John Harbaugh being fired from the Ravens. And Mark Schlereth will join us at 520 right here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. John Harbaugh, after 18 years with the Baltimore Ravens, was released today. 180 wins in 18 seasons. You can do the math real quick there. Won a Super Bowl title for him, 13-11. I was texting with Kelsey Nicole Nelson, who covers both the Commanders and the Ravens. And what she's saying that she understands is that basically Steve Bisciotti, in the meeting with John Harbaugh, wanted major changes on his coaching staff, despite the fact that injury raveled this year. I mean, they were ravaged with injuries throughout the season. And Coach Harbaugh just wanted to kind of tweak it a little bit. And that's where the disagreement laid. And John sort of, I guess, maybe put his foot down, said it's not going to be majors changes here. And Bisciotti and him could not agree upon that. And that's why he is unemployed. But like in the NFL, not for long. He will not stay unemployed, not for long. Just hope, and Charlie, I told you this, I hope somehow, some way he don't end up in Atlanta. That's a pretty, you know, good roster of young people that they have on those Falcons. You don't have a first round pick, but they've got a good shell there, and they need somebody who's in charge, somebody who's been there, done that before. John Harbaugh's done that, and I think John will have a host of teams very interested in him to be the head coach with that type of resume.
Mike, it's similar to the Stefanski conversation, where obviously it didn't work out with the Browns and the Browns were ready to move on, but he's still a good coach in the NFL. It's just the situation, maybe time kind of wore thin with Harbaugh. 18 years is a long time in the NFL, as you
in
obviously
one
know.
Spot, yeah.
So Adam Schefter had posted just recently, Mike, we're getting development on this by the minute, that he's expected to emerge as the favorite for the head coaching job of the New York Giants. But Schefter did add that he's going to be obviously very highly sought after throughout all the coaching vacancies. Now there's seven. As Bobby always says, six, seven, eight coaches every single year.
Yep.
I think, you know, you kind of alluded to it there, Mike, at the end of last hour. The loser of the Steelers-Ravens game on Sunday Night Football almost felt like one of those two, whether it be Tomlin or Harbaugh, was going to see their time at whatever spot it be come to an end. But at the same time, both of them are very accomplished coaches at the NFL level. They both won a Super Bowl at the NFL level. And either one of them, had they been moved on from by, you know, whether it be the Steelers or the Ravens, it would not take long for either one of them to find a job. I think Harbaugh is going to be pretty quick on the market. Some team's going to lock him down and lock down his services for the foreseeable future. Because like we said, he can still coach, Mike. It's not a question about that. It's just maybe that his time in Baltimore was starting to wear a little thin.
And you heard the Ravens players talk about his relationship with them and how he was like another dad to them. And,
yeah.
And that he could be really stern and really tough on them. But how much they respected that it was a one-on-one type deal with them. A lot of coaches, they don't want to get involved with that, okay? And they want to change their personalities because the fans or the media wants you to change. John Harbaugh never changed, okay? Now, he's different from his brother Jim personality-wise in some areas. But, man, I got a lot of respect for what John Harbaugh did at Baltimore. He was so close a couple times.
Yep.
You know, and then to have Brady and the Patriots make that run while you there. And then all of a sudden, here comes Mahomes, okay, in Kansas City. And, you know, a lot of people was, well, he only won one Super Bowl. How many has your coach won?
Exactly. <Okay? laughs>
How many has your coach at your team won? People don't realize how hard it is in this league in 18 years to win 180 games. That is really impressive and what he's been able to do. Nothing against Steve Bisciotti, because I think people don't realize how involved Steve Bisciotti is with the Ravens. And I'm not talking about just ownership. I'm talking about selection of players from draft, free agency. Steve Bisciotti is knee-deep in it. And they have drafted really well over the last few years. I give the Ravens that. They've done a fantastic job of bringing in players yearly, because you're going to lose guys back and forth, but also bringing them in. It's a well-run organization, but the time had kind of come to the end. And maybe you need another voice. Here's my thing. When you cut loose Harbaugh, you better have somebody as good or better.
Well, that's the thing,
that's going to be the issue.
And that's what you can see for a couple other coaching situations, like the stuff with Todd Bowles in the Buccaneers. He hasn't been fired yet, but you know, many people think he might be moved on from with the Buccaneers finally missing the postseason. The grass is not always greener, and that is what we would warn some of these teams. That's what you should warn the Ravens. I mean, I don't know, man. They better, like you said, they better have someone in mind that's going to be able to hop right in and be successful right off the bat, because moving on from Harbaugh like you did, where there was an established floor with John Harbaugh, it's kind of a questionable move, in my opinion, Mike.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I told you this 3 weeks ago. I bet Cliff Kingsbury won't make it till February.
Yeah.
With the Commanders. Sure enough, he's out of there, and he's hunting down a head coaching job, or trying to get another head coaching job in the National Football League. A lot of people in this league think highly of Cliff Kingsbury.
Maybe working with a talented young quarterback again, Mike.
Yeah, and that, I think that's what he's looking for. You know, he didn't make it work at Tech. Arizona. That's from ownership down. Man, what he did in that 1 year with Jaden Daniels, now they had some injuries at the quarterback position. And I thought the Commanders got old, like almost overnight for that football team. But Cliff Kingsbury's out on the market. Man, his agent, man, he's throwing that out all over about teams interested in hiring him. How true all that is, I don't know, but man, his agent, he's kind of pumping the prime, so to speak. When we come back, we'll have on with us Odyssey NFL Insider, also NFL on Fox analyst Mark Schlereff, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. And on our talking text line, we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. You can listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast now on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Mark, thanks for joining us. And man, you got a lot of content on the podcast for this week.
Yeah, right. There's no question about it. Yeah, and by the way, we just released the Leftovers podcast about the Atlanta Falcons New Orleans game that I called over the weekend. So that just hit on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. You can find it on YouTube if you so desire to listen to, you know, kind of the breakdown of that game. But anyhow, thank you, man, for having me. I appreciate it.
Mark, before we get into Saints, news broke a little over an hour ago. John Harbaugh out in Baltimore. I told this to Charlie, and watching that game, whoever lost, you had a feeling they weren't going to be the head coach of either one of those two teams. The loser, he wasn't going to survive. I think sometimes you just run out of time, and, you know, it sort of maybe stale, but man, you think about what Harbaugh did, 18 years, 180 wins in the regular season. Yeah. He wins you a title. Okay, you 13-11 in postseason. Bisciotti better damn well get him a guy that's better than Harbaugh if you're going to run him off.
Yeah, you know, there's been reports coming out of there, and I don't know, you know, I mean, it's always where there's smoke, there's fire. So there's been reports about a little bit of dysfunction or a little bit of a headbutt between Harbaugh and the quarterback, Lamar Jackson. So I don't know what's true, what's not true, but it certainly seems like something went down this year. It was a little bit different. So I think all those things are, you know, probably on the table. And listen, John Harbaugh, I don't know if he'll take a year off. I don't know where he sits right now, but I guarantee you one thing. There's probably five teams that have called that, hey, man, are you interested in come coaching our team right now? You know, so it'll be really interesting. New voice there with the Baltimore Ravens. But, man, what a unbelievable run. That's, you know, 180 games. That's 10 games a season that he's won while the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens on average. So, unbelievable run. Good for him. And we'll see what happens.
I hope Arthur Blank don't have his number, to be honest with you. I don't want to see him in Atlanta. But in watching the Saints and, you know, the way the season ended, And I think for every team, when you're starting to rebuild, and that's what this team is in the rebuild stage, you're always looking for a couple tackles. You got them. Okay. Kelvin Banks Jr., yeah. What he did at left tackle. I think Fuaga's right tackle spot, man, he's good there. You got you your pass rusher in Chase Young, and you got you your quarterback. And I think those are so big pieces of the puzzle when you're trying to get this together. And hopefully Eric McCoy can come back healthy, because he gives you the man in the middle at center. You've done a number of the Saints games, and watching him at the end, what he was able to do with this almost looked like a preseason game with the offensive weapons around him and what he had up front to protect him. You can't come away and not be impressed with Tyler Shough.
No, well, there's no question about that. And then, you know, you talk about the, like, it was like, you know, being kids in the neighborhood and trying to drum up a Nerf football game. Like, you just knocking on doors going, anybody want to come play with us? We're going to play Nerf football. You know, I mean, it was like the guys they had. And it was funny because, you know, he had missed a couple of throws. To the kid. Oh, gosh, what was his name? I flushed the names right when I'm done.
Kevin Austin. Game,
but. Yeah, no, but it was the other kid, number 85. Was it Bell or whatever the kid?
Yeah, Ronnie Bell. Ronnie Bell.
Yeah, Ronnie Bell. And then he missed a couple of throws, and just you know, I mentioned on the broadcast, time on task. And then he hits him late in that game after he had missed two or three of them. Perfect throw. He played his butt off, man. That quarterback is legit, you know. And I understand that. You know, they got into the interception late in that game. Great defensive play, and tip your cap to D. Alford for making that play. But yeah, you've solved it. Now you need to upgrade your offensive line. Your guard positions need to be upgraded. I think Fortin did a pretty good job. You got to figure out what your running back situation is, and all that. But man, I'm really impressed with what Tyler Shough has become. And like I said to you guys on many different occasions, he is no question the best quarterback out of this last draft class. And it's not close, I don't believe. And then I'm really impressed with Kellen Moore, even though he's a Boise State guy. I'm still I have a lot of respect for what he was able to accomplish. And I love the direction that Mickey Loomis and the rest of the people, Randy Mueller and all those guys over there, the direction they're taking that franchise in. They're doing it the right way. They're going to build it, you know, the right way. And it certainly looks like they found their QB.
Mark, because there are some moments in a game you say, oh, Juwan Johnson at tight end. He'll drop an easy pass. Or, you know, he had to fumble against Atlanta. And then he makes an unbelievable catch. You see, you know, he's in the top seven or eight of the tight ends and receptions and yards and everything else. Your thoughts on Juwan Johnson and seeing him as he's maturing in this league, going from being what you want to call a big receiver to now sort of a flex tight end.
Yeah, and I'm a big Juwan guy. Like I think he's done a phenomenal job transitioning, and he's not, you know, a trained killer out there blocking people, but he's a willing participant. Like he's not afraid to mix it up and get in there. And you know, and he's from a receiving standpoint, you know, I know a lot of people are in love with Kyle Pitts, but I wouldn't spend money on Kyle Pitts. I think Juwan does a much better job in the blocking game, and he's a dynamic receiver. And so I really like what he has become, you know, and there's been work there as a, you know, undrafted free agent out of Oregon wide receiver. It took years of transitioning, you know, years of working on a skill set. And I'm really impressed with him. And you know, he was the only kind of go-to guy they had on that offense because everybody else was coming off the practice squad. So I'm impressed with what he's been able to the way he's been able to progress in his career.
One of the best coaching jobs this year, and we didn't see it early, but boy, we saw it late. Brandon Staley. And not everybody's built for the big room to be the head coach, but man, how he's got this unit. And you know, there's a lot of other pieces he's got to add to the puzzle. But doing it with older players like a Cam Jordan, Davin Godshaw, Demario Davis, and then he's got all these rookies in Quincy Riley and Jonas Sanker and a second-year guy, certainly with Kool-Aid McKinstry. And, man, that defense played damn good down the stretch, Mark.
They certainly did. And it's funny because I talked to Brandon about it, you know, about getting another opportunity to be a head coach and what he's learned and, you know, all those things. And one of the things he said to me was, and I talked about it on the broadcast, is like, man, I really have become more demanding of my players. And, you know, I think when you first get that opportunity, you're trying to build relationships and you're trying to, you know, make it, you know, I want to be everybody's best friend or whatever. And man, he is not that way. He's like, man, I want, you know, I want guys to be held accountable. I want to challenge them. I want to demand a ton from them. And, you know, he did that. The other thing is he walks in there and the first conversation he has with Cam Jordan was Cam was like, hey, man, you know, they moved me inside last year and I don't want to play inside. That's not where I play. He goes, hey, man, I guarantee you're going to be outside. You're going to do the things that you do well. And look at what Cam Jordan did in year 15, 10 sacks or whatever he had. He was amazing. And then the complete player that Chase Young has become. Chase Young, you know, it was just not quite there. Like, he'd show flashes but lacked consistency, lacked the run game, you know, and a passion for the run game. Chase Young just, I mean, the way he played on Sunday, man, he was a dominant, dominant figure. And I'm just proud of that kid, you know, because he came in as such a highly touted guy, one rookie, you know, defensive rookie of the year, then the injury, the ACL, and he just really has taken some time to work and grow in confidence and all that stuff. And I think Brandon Staley really challenged him, and that's one of the reasons he grew and he became such a dominant player.
Inside of Calls with Mark Schlereffer, brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Charlie?
Mark, it's actually a fun point. Before I get into the playoff preview, the stuff about Chase Young, I think I remember we've been talking to you for a couple of years now. When Chase Young was on the 49ers, you had kind of highlighted in that playoff push that even despite the 49ers winning some games, that opposing offenses were scheming up to run straight at him and challenging him to stop the run game. And I think that's maybe one of the underrated things that he improved in this year, was that he wasn't a negative in rush defense. He was able to hold his own and really kind of attack the rushing game, on top of his excellent performance as far as 10 sacks and basically 12 games played as a pass rusher. So his evolution has been something to really behold, and I think it's money well spent. The Saints have him locked down for another 2 years at, I think, around 17 average annual value for a solid edge rusher like Chase Young. Once again, I think it's money well spent.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And he's, yeah, I just gave him before the game, I saw him, and you know, just a big old hug. First off, the dude is ginormous,
right,
man. That dude is the predator. Like, I'd forgotten how big he is. I'm like, son of a gun. You know, when he was playing with Washington and he tore his ACL, he and I have had, you know, several different encounters over the years, and I just tried to help mentor him. And, you know, one of the things I told him when he was coming back from the ACL is, you know, when you're injured like that, you've got to reestablish your new 100%. And it may be 80% of what you used to be, but you've got to be able to go, that's my new 100%, and it's plenty good enough to go out here and whip ass. And you've got to be able to mentally get over that hurdle. And so we're talking about that, and he goes, dude, like 100% right. But he goes, man, I got to tell you, finally, I feel like mentally I've overcome it, and I don't think about it anymore. And I'm not, you know, and so it's cool to watch a kid mature like that. And then to be a dominant player and to get challenged by Staley to say, hey, man, you know what, there is more to your game and you don't even realize it. And then to challenge him and to push him in that direction, I thought, it's just really cool to watch. And like I said, Sunday, man, that dude was a dominant performer, dominant.
Mark, you were one of two people that told me in August, watch out for the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. You and Pete Jenkins. Pete had went work with their defensive line. And your thoughts this weekend, Buffalo Jaguars. And, man, if I'm Buffalo, you know, finally I don't have to face Mahomes, okay? He's not there anymore. But then you got the young kids, okay, walking down the block for the first time, so to speak. And what a great job Leon Cohen's done. Your thoughts on Buffalo-Jacksonville?
Yeah, you know, I think this is probably, going into the playoffs, the worst Buffalo team that Josh Allen has taken in the playoffs. And, you know, I mean, the thing about them is they don't defend the run. Defensively, they've got some issues. They, you know, they've played down to the competition. You know, ultimately, too often, in my opinion, they just throw it to Josh Allen and go, hey, Superman, go win us a game. And you know what? He's capable of doing that. I think you're facing, in Jacksonville, the one team in the AFC right now is playing better than anybody else. It's playing the most complete football offensively, defensively, and special teams. And it's shown, man. In their last 4 or 5 weeks, they've been winning on an average of like 19 points a weekend. And they came here to Denver and put 34 on Denver and basically gave them a butt whipping here at home. And so, and that's a damn good defense here in Denver. So I think they're playing pretty much better than any team in the AFC right now. And, you know, it's just going to be, can Josh Allen hoist that team on his shoulders like he's done so many times before and lead them to a victory? If I'm a gambling man, and I'm not, but if I had to put money on it, I'd put money on Jacksonville to win this thing.
And if we see it, part three, Green Bay, Chicago. And, man, the first two games were terrific. If you just, if you don't have a dog in the match, so to speak, man, you love to watch those type games. And Caleb showed some magic there, and the Packers and all the buildup. And then they on a 1 month losing streak now and has kind of hit the skids since the injury to Micah Parsons. Your thought on the Saturday game between Green Bay and Chicago?
Yeah. I mean, listen, Green Bay, can you stop that running game of Chicago? Because that running game of Chicago is legit. And that, to me, is what they do. They do so well. You know, my big thing when you're talking about Caleb Williams is, on schedule, I think Caleb Williams has been, you know, inconsistent at best. But off schedule and his ability to hold on to the ball and scramble around and do all those things, he's exceptional. And, man, I heard people talk about generational talent, and then I went and looked at, you know, film of him coming out of college, and I was like, eh, whatever, you know. But to watch him scramble around and make throws, I mean, he's big time that way. I think the biggest thing about the Chicago Bears is, you know, easier said than done. You got to shut down the run because that's what they do the best. And then you got to make Caleb Williams play quarterback in a traditional sense. If you start bringing pressure and try to heat him up and allow him to break contain and allow him to make people miss in the backfield, you're going to be in for a long day, because that's when they go into scramble drill mode, and they're as good as anybody I've watched this year in scramble drill mode.
Mark, your thoughts on the Monday Night Football kind of cap off to Wild Card Weekend, the Texans at the Steelers. I saw some stats about how the Steelers are just incredible on Monday Night Football at home under Coach Tomlin, but this Texans defense, I mean, the Texans' real second half surge after a terrible start has maybe been a little bit underreported, but they're red hot entering the postseason. One thing I noticed is that, you know, people talk about how often do defenses try to kind of fool opposing offenses with different coverage looks or blitzing or different blitz packages, everything like that. The Texans have the guys on that defense to just line up the ball and just punch you in the mouth. And I think it's going to be a real fun matchup. You know, the Steelers are getting back DK Metcalf for this game after the suspension that almost, you know, forced them to miss the playoffs. Is that major of a suspension there? But the Texans defense is one of those units that I don't think really anyone in the AFC wants to see in the playoffs. Pittsburgh gets them first up.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to play the Houston Texans. And you know, Will Anderson doesn't try to just win. He just tries to humiliate you. And they're violent. And then the guy probably nobody talks about, maybe one of the best players, he's one of the most undervalued, underrated players in football, is Danielle Hunter. That dude has 15 sacks and didn't get voted into the Pro Bowl. I mean, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? And that dude is incredible. Incredible. And so defensive front-wise, Toji Ai is unbelievably skilled and really just solid nose tackle that eats up blockers and allows their linebackers, Toa Toa and Alshire, to just run around and make tackles. Athletically, they are phenomenal. They are fast. They are violent. Their two corners are as good. I think if I was putting out the best tandem of corners in football, it would go to the Houston Texans. Lassiter has just been ridiculously good. And we know how good Stingley is as well. And then you throw in Petrie playing the nickel position, and that dude is a phenomenal football player. So I just think this defense, they don't have to try to trick you. They just line up and say, come get a taste. Like, you good enough? And they're damn good. Them and the Seattle Seahawks are playing phenomenal defense right now. So I think the Houston Texans in the AFC, quite frankly, are probably the one team that nobody might admit it, but everybody sits there and thinks, man, I'd like to be able to avoid those guys going forward.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. You did a great job covering the NFL during the regular season, but man, that's something special. You know, when you hit, you know, the first round of playoffs, and then the second round is normally where you get some unbelievable games. But you and Chris Myers, Jen, y'all did a great job covering the NFL this year, and really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys, man. Take care. We'll talk to you.
Thanks, Mark.
All righty. That was our Odyssey NFL Insider, Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Mark is also the host of the Odyssey original, the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He told you he's got a little bit of bleed over from Saints Falcons, and you can download that now if you want to listen to it. Remember to listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. When we come back, it'll be our triple option feature, myself along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller, right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller, our triple option feature. I get asked about this a lot. A couple of weeks back, we talked about it. Who the Saints would pick, and my thing was Jeremiah Love, a running back from Notre Dame. I think he would be a great fit in this offense as a runner receiver. My comp certainly would be Bijan Robinson. So someone asked me, what happens if he gets selected ahead of time? Some of the guys that potentially could be there, and they brought up Jordan Tyson to me, and I'm a big fan of Jordan. I think he's a terrific football player, the best route runner in this draft class. But for people putting him in the top 10, they don't know his medical history.
Right.
I would have to go to my team doctors and say, tell me what's happened here. He had a major knee injury in 2023, a major one, when he was at Colorado. And he's had a history now of these soft tissue injuries, the hamstring, the calf injury. I remember Jen Hale telling us that she did the Arizona State game. He was basically kind of 75%. I think he caught 11 passes in that game for like 90-something yards. The medicals is what would be my biggest concern for Jordan Tyson. For a lot of people, it's copy and paste. I saw it on the internet, so I'm going to write about it. With Jordan Tyson's nothing to do with talent. He is really gifted. But the medical history, and you're going to hear about it. You hear about it from me. You're going to hear about it from others. As it gets closer, it's going to be an issue with him, and that is going to be something that is going to be looked at very closely if you picking in that top 10. He's worthy of a top 10 pick talent-wise, and he would be my number one receiver. But, again, that but comes in. That situation with the surgeries he's had, also the lower leg issues that he's had, is going to be a big concern. The other guy I really love is David Bailey, the edge rusher from Texas Tech. All he did this year was 52 tackles, 19.5 tackles for losses, and 14.5 quarterback sacks. And he was double teamed. Texas Tech sent me a thing, 71% of the time. And those are the numbers he put up. David Bailey's a bad to the bone dude. I mean, he is bad to the bone. Started out at Colorado, and man, you see his explosiveness and speed. So I think Jeremiah Love would be a great fit. And I get the question, if he's not there, where do you look? Maybe Cornell Tate. He's never really been a number one. Not with Jeremiah Smith on the other side. Yeah, you're never going to see double team work there. And he's a big receiver. So those are some of the names there. But when people talk to you about Jordan Tyson, are they telling you about his injury record? That's going to be a major question mark for Jordan as he hits the National Football League.
Mike, I remember we talked about Jordan Tyson after we had interviewed Sam Levitt.
Exactly.
At the Manning Passing Academy. And you made a comp, and you made, I'm almost certain you remember this, but I remember it because I haven't been able to get it out of my head. Every time I watch Jordan Tyson play, Emeka Ibuka was your comp for him.
Exactly, it's just like him.
They're like carbon copies of each other. And we just saw the rookie campaign that Emeka Ibuka put out there. I know that he kind of tapered off towards the end of the year, but a lot of that was due to the fact that Baker Mayfield also tapered off as well. So Ibuka, if you watch his tape and watch Jordan Tyson's tape, it's a lot of similarities. Both were super polished route runners, you know, getting ready for the draft. But like you said, if a team in the top 10 and maybe even upwards of top 6 decides we're okay with his medicals, he's been given the green light, he's been given the clear, he might not be there at 8. But we'll have to see. As far as David Bailey goes, Mike, I think he's a demon, for one. But also, there's like that core of maybe 3 edge rushers, and depending on what you want to do with Arvell Reese, that are going to go in the top 10 of this year's draft. And this is just kind of early prep because we're still 3 months away and we have the Senior Bowl and Combine and everything going on. But Reese, Reuben Bain from Miami, and then also David Bailey from Texas Tech are the names that you should get to know if you want an edge rusher with that first pick.
Arvell Reese is a freak.
He's a
athlete.
He's a stud.
Unbelievable. And he's just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
But you would think he's going to Arizona, huh?
Man,
Arizona's in a bad spot because they need a quarterback, and now you're looking
at
the
top 2
picks.
Yeah, so where do you go?
Right.
Do you make the move to jump up? Because now, if I'm Dante Moore, and okay, I feel Fernando Mendoza is going to go to the Raiders. You think I want to end up in New York?
No.
Man, what? I might tell him, hey, guys, man, it's been fun, but somebody else better trade up for me. But Arvell Reese, when he's going to work out, he is a freak of nature as a football player. And they used him as an off-ball linebacker. My thing is, put your hand in the – rush the quarterback. Please sick him. And do like Micah Parsons. Go after the quarterback at that point. That's not what Ohio State did with him. They didn't do that with them at all. So those are just some of the names. We're going to go through a lot of these particular deals. And also free agency certainly will kind of beckon the call on exactly who the Saints pick. Steve?
Mike, I guess continuing with triple option, I'm going to go more in with draft stuff and the Saints. And just curious what you think of a guy. You know, not many folks are talking about safety for the Saints right now and looking at another Ohio State guy and Caleb Downs. Would you think he'd be a viable pick at number 8?
What? Man, okay.
If he's there.
You wouldn't have to ask me twice.
Okay.
I'd have that dude running to the table. I'd say, that's who I want. Now, again, safeties and running backs get devalued.
Right.
If you had to do this draft over again a few years back, look what Kyle Hamilton's done for the Ravens. He's not as big as Kyle, because Kyle looks like a tight end the way he's built. But Caleb, when he stepped on that football field the first time, first game I saw him at University of Alabama, I'm like, whoa, that dude's a freshman? He was whipping people's butt and taking names back then. Then he goes to Ohio State. He's great against the run. I think you've seen them use him more in the coverage part of the game this year than, say, his first year at Alabama and his first season at Ohio State, where he was sort of a hybrid guy, where he played up to the – man, he pop you. Man, he is a big-time hitter. But it's going to – the intrigue with this draft is going to be the 2 outliers, Jeremiah Love on offense because of him playing that position, Caleb Downs playing defense at safety. And how do you value them in what you're trying to piece together? No, Caleb Downs, man, he – I think you talk about instant impact guy, he's that.
Yeah.
And so is Love on offense.
I just, Mike, and that safety position to me is still one of need for this defense.
What? They got a lot of positions of need. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
They filled some, but, you know, offensive guard, wide receiver, tight end, you could add another one because so much 12 personnel, running back. another defensive lineman, another linebacker, another corner, safety. Right. You can kind of go down the list. Caleb Downs, man, Steve, to answer your question, I'd have no problems with Caleb Downs if he wore the black and gold. We'll be back to finish it off here on our number two of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. Steve and Charlie come back in the 6 o'clock hour. They'll be talking more NFL draft information. Justin Mello joins them, who covers the NFL draft, does a really good job. And at 7 o'clock, Mike Haas, bunch of great guests on the Saints Hour right here on the Big 870 WWL.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into the second half of Sports Talk. This is the sixth day of 2026. Welcome into this Tuesday edition of Sports Talk. We got a bunch to get to in this hour, talking about the Saints, their number 8 overall pick in the upcoming draft. We're going to talk to Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, after the first break, and an early look at some of the options for the selection for the Saints. We talked a little even in triple option just previously with Mike Dottiglia about that. And at 7 p.m. tonight, all you hoodouts don't want to miss Voice of the Saints Mike Haas for the final Saints Hour of the season, and it is a delight. Mike scored some great interviews with quarterback Tyler Shuck, defensive end Cam Jordan, also Chase Young, center Eric McCoy, find out how he's doing in his recovery from injury, cornerback Alante Taylor, kicker Charlie Smith, and offensive tackle Taliese Fuaga. I know if you love Saints football, you're not going to want to miss this Saints Hour coming up 7 p.m. on WWL 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. I say that because 7 p.m. over on 870 AM. We got busy times over here with the Pelicans tipping off in the Smoothie King Center against the LA Lakers. And I'll be curious to see what kind of showing we get from LA. We're going to see a full LeBron James and Luka Doncic's taste of them this evening. I did see a tweet earlier, the fact that Herb Jones, thankfully, will be back in the lineup. I don't know how much he'll be playing, but man, oh man, Charlie, you know that the Pels can surely use some of his defensive presence back in the lineup, because it seems like they've been a sieve giving up points lately.
It hasn't improved. I mean, the game against the Heat, and we'll be pretty brief about this, there's so many moments where it looks like they're not even giving effort as far as grabbing boards or defensive pressure on the opponent. Like, guys, you got to start winning some games here. Like, you're not necessarily out of it as far as the Western Conference 10 seed race kind of goes, because the West isn't necessarily as deep as many expected it to be entering the year, but you got to start winning games, Steve.
You're being the complete optimist right there, saying it's not, you know, a wash right now.
It very well could be. I'm just trying to say, like, look, it's going to be a complete wash if you don't start, you know.
I know things turned around a little bit. We went out, the Pels went on a little bit of a run, but now they've been back in the losing, you know, the trend again, and have dropped 7 straight.
It's an effort thing. And I have my criticisms of Coach Borrego as well, but when the players on the floor aren't putting forth the effort to win, you can't really do much as a coach.
Yeah.
So that's just my opinion.
Talking about effort, one guy we have seen a ton of effort for this season, unfortunately, had a ending to his season in the last game of the season, and Chris Olave ended up finding out he was dealing with a blood clot after coming back this season and really shining after dealing with concussions. You heard talks about him considering retirement. Loved an article you saw on ESPN's Bill Barnwell put out, some of his MVP and top rookies, best coaches, all the, you know, season award picks for the year. And for him, well, his offensive rookie of the year, he doesn't even mention Tyler Shuck, so I don't like that part. But on his comeback player of the year, he's got Saints wide receiver Chris Olave as the guy winning that award. And, you know, that's over the likes of Troy Fatanu from the Pittsburgh Steelers, also Aiden Hutchinson from the Detroit Lions, just because of the season that Olave was about to pull together. And he was talked to in the locker room as the Saints players were cleaning out their stuff, you know, going into the offseason. He's going to be going into the last year of contract next year. Totally mentioned the fact, obviously, he wants to be back in black and gold here, loving Kellen Moore, what's building here with Tyler Shuck, and also about the injury, discovering that blood clot. Enough of me. Let's hear about from it with Saints wide receiver Chris Olave right now.
How are you feeling, and how did you kind of discover that you had a blood clot, and what went through your mind when you heard that?
I feel good right now, you know, just taking it day by day, trying to get better. But it was kind of weird because I felt like I had a bruised rib, like, after the game Sunday night and Monday night. It was tough kind of rolling over in my sleep, but Tuesday got kind of worse, and then I contacted the trainers, came in at like 5 o'clock, and then they thought it was a kidney stone at first, but ended up going to the hospital, getting CAT scans, and they found a blood clot.
Did they tell you kind of right away that, you know, your recovery should be good, or did you kind of worry there, like, you know, blood clots can be kind of serious?
They was all in the hospital with me, all the trainers and Dr. Amos. They told me right away that I was going to be good, so I just kind of followed their plan and trusted their word.
Is that a football-related issue? Like, was the blood clot created by it or something?
I don't know. They still trying to figure out where it came from. So I don't really know where it came from, so I'm still trying to figure it out too.
Of course you would have liked to finish the season, but how are you feeling mentally?
I feel good. I feel real good. I feel like I'm in a good place. I feel like I had a great good year to my standard. I feel like I left some yards out there, but I feel like I had a good year, and we finished the year off strong, especially with Tyler back there. I'm excited for next year.
Chris, how much more can this offense unlock when you have a quarterback who's solidified in position and everybody's kind of locked in?
That just gives the confidence in us. The first part of the route is not open. He can extend plays with his legs. He's faster than people think. He can get outside the pocket, and he's looking to throw the ball down the field too. So, like I said, I'm excited going forward. We got a great quarterback.
Chris, whenever we asked you about your contract, you said, like, I want to, you know, reestablish myself as kind of the number one. Do you feel like you did that? Like, did you hit your goal of being that number one?
Yeah, I feel like I did. I mean, it's all up to the front office at the end of the day. I feel like I did that, especially these last 4 or 5 games. I feel like I made it clear that I could be that. So it's all up to them at the end of the day. I feel like I did my job.
I mean, how much does it help? Like, there hasn't been a ton of stability between, like, play caller, quarterback, everything kind of being in place, knowing what it is built towards. How much do you think that helps just the future for you and the offense?
Man, it helps a lot. It helps a lot. I feel like the first couple of years, it was hard to be able to say that was stable, but it helps a lot with the bigger picture. It makes me want to stay here even more. I know it's going to be here with Kellen. Tyler's, like I said, Tyler's a great quarterback, and that's probably the main two things you need as a receiver. So it makes me want to get that contract done even more, and hopefully it happens soon.
How did Kellen kind of play into, you know, your positive impression of this franchise, and how did you see him kind of grow over the course of the year being a first-year coach?
Oh, he's great, man. He's a great, like I said, from the beginning of the year, I love Kellen. He's an offensive-minded coach, but even through the adversity, he stayed who he was. He never pointed the finger at nobody. He just kept going and stayed positive, and he's a great leader. He's done a great job this year, and it's going to be even better moving forward when we get back to winning.
There's always a level of team that you can see when they kind of believe in. I mean, it doesn't matter who's out there, you know, kind of just that fight. Did that develop over the course of the season? Because you look at the roster that went out there this week, it would have been easier to kind of fold up, but they kind of pushed it to the end. Like, what is that?
I feel like it's been like that all year. Even in the beginning of the year, it was always one-score games or a close game where we could have won the game, but it was just mistakes we was making. It didn't matter who was going out there. Even with Spencer at quarterback, it was always a close game, and everybody was fighting to the end. So I feel like that's just the culture that Kellen brought in. Everybody's connected and locked in to one goal, so and that's winning.
That was Saints receiver Chris Olave speaking to the media after the Black and Gold finished their season and now get ready for off-season stuff. A lot of folks doing rehab in the facility, like guys like Eric McCoy, who you hear on the Saints Hour coming up at 7 p.m. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, getting more into Black and Gold discussions, talking draft. Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, joins us talking about that number 8 pick for the Black and Gold and who are those top names available out there that could be on Kellen Moore's wish list. We're going to come back with more of Sports Talk right after this, folks. Stay tuned on WWL. Who dat? Welcome back into Sports Talk here on WWL. Steve Gell along with Charlie Long. And happy to welcome in now Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, as we get ready for the offseason. Even though we got playoffs to talk about this weekend, there's a lot of teams already looking ahead to the draft, man. And Justin, you know, Saints fans are ready picking away at that number 8 pick, trying to decide what this black and gold bunch should do with that selection. So I was like, man, let me call a guy I feel knows so much about this draft. And all of a sudden, you know, the Senior Bowl is coming up too as well. I know, see you out there. Just a fun time with the offseason coming up, and so many of these prospects to talk about. Is there anything at number 8 that stands out for you as a must for the black and gold, that if they're available, it's a no-brainer? And a lot of folks right now, to me, I think the most popular selection is if Jeremiah Love, the running back from Notre Dame, is there. A lot of folks seem to be locking in as that as their wish list number 1 pick for the Saints.
Well, I think the New Orleans Saints are entering the draft in a really good position. You know, being at number 8 overall, a little bit lower than most of us expected at the beginning of the year.
Right.
It's a good problem to have, right? I think you look at the way the year ended. They finished hot. They won a bunch of games in a row at the end there. Coming out of this season, I think they probably learned two things that every NFL franchise in their position wants to learn, right? It's that, hey, we believe we've got a good head coach, right? That's number 1. They took a bit of a chance on Kellen Moore. Anytime it's a first-time candidate, there's always the risk there that you don't know how it's going to go. I think Kellen Moore did a great job in his first season in New Orleans. You feel real good about that. And, of course, you feel good about the quarterback. You know, Tyler Shough steps into the lineup roughly midway through, a little earlier than that, and really played like a franchise quarterback down the stretch, right? So they enter this draft going, we believe we've got our coach and we believe we have our quarterback. They've got some young pieces on the offensive line. They spent back-to-back picks there at offensive tackle. So they feel good about how they have fortified that unit. They're in a good spot. You know, I think you look at, I don't know, I wouldn't go as far to say best player available yet. Yeah. I don't think that roster is quite in that position. But I look at edge. You know, this is a really good draft, at least at the top at the edge rushing spot. You know, Cameron Jordan's not going to be around forever. I know Saints fans would love to put him in like one of those chambers and keep him around, but I don't think he's going to be there forever. I look at certainly someone like Jeremiah Love. You got an offensive-minded head coach who you believe in as a schemer and a designer of plays. You'd love to see what he could do with a talent, dynamic talent like that. Certainly Alvin Kamara, I would maybe put in the Cameron Jordan bucket, is not going to be around for much longer. I look at maybe a supporting wide receiver to get in that offense and help the young quarterback. I think they could use another cornerback at some point as well. But they're in a really good spot to probably stick and pick at number 8 and know that they're going to be able to get a really good prospect that will address one of their needs.
You know, Justin, I think it's interesting. There's 3 potential edge rushers that go in the top 10 here, with Ohio State's Arvell Reese, Miami's Reuben Bain, Texas Tech's David Bailey. All 3 of them are kind of different in different ways. I just want to get your thoughts on those guys, because like you had mentioned, edge rusher Cam Jordan's not going to be around forever. Maybe if the Saints don't go with an offensive weapon, like a lot of folks are saying they might do, if it's not Jeremiah Love, then going with one of the top weapons at receiver, because there's a few of those that are going to go in the top 10 as well, that one of these top premier edge rushers in the top 10 picks could potentially fall to them at pick 8 and they could jump on it.
Yeah, this is a fascinating discussion at edge. And by the way, I could have the same discussion at wide receiver, because
right,
I think there are 3 guys that are all different and have question marks. But at the edge spot specifically, you know, my rundown, Arvell Reese might have the most athletic, have the most athleticism and probably upside of the 3. He might also be the biggest projection, right? He was playing off-ball linebacker at Ohio State. It really bummed me out that down the stretch of their season, the Buckeyes season, Matt Patricia, their defensive coordinator, wasn't giving him a whole lot of opportunities to rush the passer. I mean, selfishly, I would have really liked to have seen that from an evaluation perspective. He had no sacks in his last 6 games, but you've got to watch the tape. He wasn't rushing the passer anymore. He was playing a bit of a C-ball, chase ball, off-ball role. And, you know, you're projecting that he's going to be an edge rusher. Now, listen, there are a couple guys in recent drafts that do him some favors, right? You look at the transition that Micah Parsons made. You look at the transition that Abdul Carter made. I could see Arvell Reese following a similar path and making a similar transition. But right now it's a question mark, right? Because he didn't do it with a lot of consistency at Ohio State. When I get to Reuben Bain Jr., You know, he's responded to the criticism in recent weeks in stunning fashion. He's been really good throughout the college football playoff. Really good game in the first upset there over Texas A&M. Then maybe an even better game in the stunning upset over Ohio State. You know, what scouts are saying about him is that he's going to have real short arms, right? When they get to the measurement process, just to give you an example, when Aiden Hutchinson was coming out, and you might recall, we had a similar discussion about arm length. His arms aren't long enough. In fact, probably a big reason why the Jacksonville Jaguars didn't take him at number one overall. Well, here's the comparison for you. Aiden Hutchinson had about 33-inch arms, right? And we called that short. Reuben Bain is going to come in around 30 and a half, 31. I mean, it only sounds like two and a half inches. It is unprecedented when it comes to arm length at the edge rushing position. It's unbelievably short. We're talking about a 2, 3, 4 percentile result in the arm length department. So, yeah, scouts are going to have a real problem with that. It's one of those things they're very nitpicky about. In fact, it's got some of them claiming he might be a three tech, a defensive tackle at the next level. And that almost puts him in the Arvell Reese conversation. It's a bit of, if you think this guy's got to switch positions, then it's a projection. You know, I like him out on the edge. I don't think it's straightforward to say that he's a defensive tackle. When I watch him rush the passer, I think he does a great job with that distance between him and the tackle. He's able to get some build-up speed, some build-up power. You put him inside there at the tackle. Now you're talking about him fighting in closed quarters. I don't know that I feel the same way about him. So that's a huge question mark we'll be tracking throughout the process. And then when you get to David Bailey, the questions are different, but I still think there are some concerns there. Now, listen, he's probably got the most polished pass rush arsenal of the three. Certainly, you watch him on tape, speed, athleticism, turns the corner really well, wins that outside shoulder, can bend and turn the arc. No doubt about it, he's athletic. I think he converts speed to power at a high level as well. He's got a great spin move. Like, this is a diverse pass rush arsenal. But he is a little bit undersized to play on early downs. And a lot of times, Texas Tech was taking him off the field on those run-stopping downs. Now, that's one of those things where you might say, you're overthinking it. The guy can rush the passer at a high level. He had 14.5 sacks this year, led college football D1 with that amount. He was phenomenal in that playoff loss against Oregon. Really did his pre-draft stock a lot of favors. But the teams, you know, they get nitpicky over that too. They want you to be able to stop the run early down. If I'm picking a guy 5, 6, 7, 8 overall, I don't necessarily want him to be a situational pass rusher. I don't want to have to take him off the field occasionally. So I think all three of these edge rushers, the valuations are very different. All of them have their questions, and it might be a pick your flavor. You know, not everyone's going to rank all three of them the same way.
Looking at some of the wide receivers, Justin, with that 8th overall pick, you would think maybe you would have Carnell Tate from Ohio State or a Jordan Tyson, Arizona State, available for the Saints to select. Do you see either one of those two as a better fit than the other in Kellen Moore's scheme?
Well, I look at what Chris Olave does. You know, terrific short to intermediate route runner, can play the Z, can play the slot. I think if they want to diversify their pass-catching corps, both of them can probably play the X spot. I think Carnell Tate's got a bit better size out there on the outside, might be your prototype X receiver. But I think Jordan Tyson is really good playing outside too, and I think he's got the frame to go up and make contested catches. He did that on tape a lot at Arizona State. So I certainly think both of those guys might be able to fit what Kellen Moore is looking for. I can get long-winded at receiver, too. You know, I think with Tate, I do think he's probably going to be the wide receiver one in this draft, but I don't know that I see a high-end elite prospect. Now, the Saints may not need him to be that guy because you pair someone with Chris Olave, you don't need to be a Jamar Chase when you've got Chris Olave opposite you, right? Like, you don't need to be a guy that needs to see 15, 16 targets every single week. You need to come in and play your role, play opposite Olave, be a sort of a maybe a 1B to his 1A. And I think you feel good, really good, about Carnell Tate in a role like that. I think the ceiling is probably higher with Jordan Tyson. I mean, if he can stay healthy, and that's the big question mark with him, I do think there's a bit more potential to explore with his upside. Now, the elephant in the room is he's missed about 40%. And I've been saying that number purposely because I wanted to scare you because I want you to understand what you're dealing with here. He's missed about 40% of his college football career with injury. Now, he had the torn ACL many years ago at Colorado. He seemed to get past that. Some of the other stuff has maybe been a little freakish. Maybe it's some bad luck, collarbone, he had a hamstring. Certainly hasn't repeated the season-ending variety of injury. But, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire. Why has he had so many of these sort of little nagging injuries that have caused him to miss, maybe you'd even say a significant amount of time every single year? There's something that seems to sideline him for 3, 4, 5 weeks every season. And it's always something different, right? It was the knee. It was the collarbone. It was the hamstring. So there are going to be question marks about, you know, the medicals are going to be huge for him throughout this process. I also really like Mekhi Lemon out of USC. You know, I don't think people are including him enough in this conversation at wide receiver. I'll read you two names that are going to do him a lot of favors. I talked about Abdul Carter and Micah Parsons being a good example for Arvell Reese. Well, in Mekhi Lemon's case, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown and it's Jackson Smith and Jigba because, you know, here's a guy in Mekhi Lemon that doesn't have the size to play outside. He's certainly not going to play X in anybody's offense. Maybe there's enough versatility to play Z, but he certainly looks like an everyday slot, right? He just like some of those guys, JSN and Amon-Ra St. Brown, he quickly uncovers. He's a QB-friendly target, really good at creating separation. He's also outstanding at making contested catches for his size. I don't know that I've ever seen a 5'10 receiver with his ability to go climb the ladder over defenders and come down with those 50-50 balls. So I'm not saying he's going to be the first receiver drafted. It'll probably be Carnell Tate or Jordan Tyson. But whichever one of those guys is your perceived number two, don't be surprised if Mekhi Lemon gets drafted ahead of that guy.
Lemon catches everything. Justin, I mean, anything that's in his vicinity, as you mentioned, he's fantastic. And he plays so much bigger than his size because that is the number one detriment to him. But he is super, super electric to watch on tape. My last one for you, I wanted to bring up Caleb Downs because, Justin, I know we've talked with you in the past about positional value and how certain positions like running back and safety are a little bit devalued. And that's maybe why Caleb Downs might slide a little bit in the early first round. But if he's there at pick 8, I think the Saints would potentially run that pick up to the podium and feel pretty good about it. Having Caleb Downs, Jonas Sanker as your safety duo of the future, but Downs, his positional versatility as a safety is, I think, what also makes him really impressive. You see some of these players that teams draft in the first round or maybe even early second round, like Eman Worry last year for Seattle, where you can play him in a couple different spots in the secondary and it increases enhances their value for your defense. I just think Caleb Downs, if you're talking about players you would bet would have double-digit NFL careers, that you think they're going to be in the NFL for a long time, long productive career. I don't think it really gets any further than Caleb Downs.
He's the best prospect in this draft. He's number one on my big board right now. I'll tell you, the comedian in me finds it hilarious that if you were stacking a big board right now and just say, who's the best overall prospects, regardless of positional value, is it not a safety at number one and a running back at number two? Like, it's got to be Caleb Downs and Jeremiah Love. They are the most straightforward evaluations, the best, most dynamic prospects in this class. So I'm fascinated to watch this process unfold for them and see where they end up because, yes, the positional value conversation, of course, it's a very real thing. And you know, we're talking Caleb, but in Jeremiah's case, you know, you saw a team take a running back at 6 last year. It didn't work out well. The Raiders are a disaster. That might impact the conversation around him. At safety, I mean, I remember when Kyle Hamilton might have been the best player in the draft, but went like 14th overall, you know, partially due to the positional value question. So it's fascinating to see what's going to happen with a prospect like Caleb Downs. But I will say this. I don't think this draft features a lot of high-end talent, right? Like, we just asked a bunch of questions about the three top edges, the top wide receivers. There is no straightforward offensive tackle that's the best tackle in this class. Like the best one might be a guard, right, in the Miami kid. So you look at the, you know, some of the premium positions, edge, wide receiver, offensive line, none of them are just straightforward, right? There's not a guy that would be a no-brainer number one pick if this wasn't a quarterback's draft. So I wonder if that, because that's a fact in my opinion, right? Like, this is not a high-end talent draft. That might get teams to say, forget the positional value. I'm just going to take Caleb Downs here at number three. He's not going to go number one. I don't think he's going to go. I mean, he could go number two if Dante Moore doesn't declare. But I think teams are going to be more than willing to kind of overlook the positional value thing and say, hey, I'm just going to get a Caleb Downs, or I'm just going to get a Jeremiah Love because I like them a lot better than what else is available. It's going to be fascinating to watch that process unfold for these two prospects.
Justin, always top-tier breakdowns from you. Appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you.
Pleasure was all mine. You guys know where to find me.
Thanks, Justin.
Justin Mello. You can find them at the Draft Network, covers the NFL there. You can follow him also on Twitter or X at JustinM_NFL. You heard him. Great info there. As always, from Justin Mello. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk, coming back with more right after this. Stay tuned, folks, on WWL. Welcome back into WWL. We're getting ready for the Saints Hour, coming up with Mike Hawes. He's got a heck of a lineup with him on the finale of the Saints Hour. QB Tyler Shuck, defensive end Cam Jordan, along with Chase Young, Eric McCoy, Alante Taylor, Charlie Smith, Taliese Fuaga, you name it. It's on with Mike Hawes and the Saints Hour this evening, coming up at 7 p.m. on 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. Meanwhile, 7 o'clock over on 870 AM, Pelicans taking on the L.A. Lakers. Going to get into our talk and text line. GM James on the line. I see you want to talk about pick number 8 in this draft. What you like, James? What's going on, man?
Yeah. So I'm with Charlie. We talked about Downs, but here's the thing. You got to get this kid some weapons, speaking of Tyler, because there's enough game tape on him by now. That if you roll out the same guys, he's got no weapons, and his sophomore season is going to be tragic. But when you look at the division, it's no wonder, and this is really key, and I want you guys' opinion on this. When you look at the division, it's Carolina in order, Carolina, Tampa, Falcons, and us. That was the chronological order how we finished the division. It's no small wonder to me that on both sides of the line, in the middle, Carolina has the best middle offensive lineman. They paid two guards a few years ago, so they got the best middle as far as offensive guards are concerned. They got the best middle on the D-line with Derrick Brown. And then you look at Tampa, same thing. They drafted good guys. And then Atlanta, you know, they got some decent guys like the guy Lindstrom or what have you. So in order for us to really win the division, we got to get better in the middle. But we got to get this kid weapons.
We're with you.
Yeah.
We want to improve the middle. Yeah. The interior of that O-line definitely needs a boost.
Both sides of the line. Go ahead.
Because Breeze, as much as I like Breezy, he's a pass-rushing guy, but he's no good, you know, defending the run.
Too high. He's six foot five. Teams can get, or offensive guards can get under his pads and just move him off the ball in the run game. So I'm right there with you. As far as improving the interior offensive line, Mike has said in the past that he wants to address it in free agency.
Yeah.
I'm with him, but I also want to get a guard in day two. Not day one, right? Like with the 8th overall pick, we just talked to Justin Mello from the Draft Network. He gave a lot of really intriguing prospects that the Saints should target, whether that be offensive weapons for Tyler Shuck to help his development entering year two and help him make that year two leap, or even some defensive studs as far as the defensive lineman at the top of this draft class, or even Caleb Downs, who, as he mentioned, is his number one player in the entire draft. The reason he might be there at pick 8, he's a safety, and safeties are devalued in the draft. Same thing, Jeremiah Love, the number two player in his draft rankings, could be there at 8 as well because he's a running back. And offensively, running backs are devalued. So there are options for the Saints at pick 8. I think that, you know, they're going to end up with a stud there. But as far as moving ahead to day two,
yeah,
James, that's where I think that you start having the offensive guard conversation, maybe getting an interior defensive lineman as well. And then we'll see, you know, there's a couple pieces on the interior offensive line. I know the Penn State kid is going to be probably an early day two pick. So that's the good part about having these early picks and not having traded your draft capital last year, is that you don't just have pick 8. You have an early pick on day two, second round, third round, and you can kind of continue to build inside and out with those early selections. So I think it's going to be fascinating to follow. We'll do a little bit more of a deep dive into later selections, but just kind of early on, we're in January. We're talking about the eighth overall pick because it's real flashy, but the Saints have some great opportunities later on, day two and day three, to really kind of build the meat and potatoes of the team.
And Charlie, I would say that the 2025 draft was a pretty darn good success, and I'd love to see them be able to duplicate that kind of return for this season.
Early returns are very positive.
Right.
And I don't think there's any question about that, but you got to do it again. And that's how you build a roster up, through the draft. Continue to hit on these picks. Continue to build the foundation that Kellen Moore kept talking about during the Saints coaches show last night. Bring in these fresh young pieces to eventually take over for these aging veterans. And that's how you build to the future and build a playoff roster. So I think the Saints are in a good spot for, just like Justin had said, with pick eight, but also those early selections on day two and day three, that they'll feel good about themselves grabbing not just, you know, the flashy talent with the eighth overall selection, but also some really strong players to kind of build out the roster as well.
Bunch of positivity for the black and gold. I love it right now. We're going to take a break here on WWL, coming back with more. We'll wrap things up on Sports Talk right after this. Stay tuned, folks. Well, everyone, that's a wrap on today's edition of Sports Talk. Want to let you all know that tomorrow's show, it is Drew Day. Soon to be Pro Football Hall of Famer Drew Brees is going to join the Cajun Cannon, go QB to QB tomorrow. That's at 4:10 p.m. Plus, they'll talk a little bit about the NFL playoffs, I'm sure. And we'll do a recap of GM Mickey Loomis and head coach Kellen Moore's season-ending press conferences. Oh, yeah, by the way, you can hear that live, 11 a.m. We'll be carrying that for you. Me and sideline reporter Jeff Nowak will be joining Newell Norman, anchoring that live coverage as we bring you Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis's season-ending press conferences tomorrow. Thanks a lot for tuning in this evening, folks. Stay tuned, all you Hoodats, for the Saints Hour with Mike Haas coming up next here on WWL 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. Have a great night, folks. Who dat?